Greetings, brethren. Welcome to Sabbath services. And so we've been getting comments that the lake behind me looks so real that it looks like I'm talking to you from the shores of the Sea of Galilee. And John the Baptist is right over there. Okay. Well, we will have little discussion concerning what happened in Boston. And I think it's very interesting that whatever I had to say about it, I said, 2 weeks before it took place in this insane world in God's judgment? And I think I asked, I don't know whether it was in that sermon or whether it was on a Church at Home segment that I did, but after the latest snowstorms and all the hurricanes and lawless gun laws and all the shootings and, you know, I made the comment, I wonder if you people in the Northeast have had enough yet. And so then what happens? We have this take place, this terrorist bombing, and there were quite a few interesting things involved. The first thing that came out, one commentator in Boston said he hopes it's a homegrown terrorist, because anything else would set our cause back too far, the progressive cause. Well, as it turned out, wasn't that. Other people who said, well, it's the federal government at it again, doing things to set up the Homeland Security as an inner army within the United States. Well, now, I know sooner or later that'll probably happen, but I don't think the government did it, although I suppose you could say those two brothers look like government employees, huh? Who knows? Very interesting how everything worked out. Look at how quickly they were able to take all of the evidence, put it together, or narrow it down to those two brothers. And they did it quite quickly. However, I was more impressed after they had taken the younger brother captive and alive. What struck me was the celebration in the streets. Everyone was out there dancing and yelling and happy and, you know, passing around the beer, passing around the scotch, passing around the Irish whiskey, you know, and everyone was having a whoopee of a good time. I was impressed also at one of the sporting events where they decided that the whole audience of the attendees there would stand up and sing the Star Spangled Banner. So now they've decided that was so successful, they're going to do it at every major sporting event in Boston. Now, how much that will accomplish, I don't know. But you see, that can be very, very rousing, very, you know, uplifting and so forth. But I just happened to think this thought struck me when I saw them all rejoicing at the capture of these two, the death of one and the capture of the other. And it reminded me of two who will be called real terrorists by the world, the two witnesses. They're going to have power from God, and they aren't going to be able to stop them. They won't have to look up photos to try and find them, because they'll be right there in Jerusalem. And everything is going to be in a difficult situation. Let's read it here, Revelation 11 and verse 3. And I was struck at also another factor we'll look at in a little bit. But verse 3, Revelation 11. And I will give power to my two witnesses, and they shall prophesy 1,260 days clothed in sackcloth. These are the two olive trees and the two lampstands that stand before the God of the earth, the two most powerful men that will ever be in the history of what God has given gifts of power to men and prophets. Now, they will have special protection. Plus, they'll have their own weapon. And if anyone attempts to harm them, fire will go out of their mouths and devour their enemies. Now, let's think about what the news media is going to do when this happens. See? Guess what's going to happen? For if anyone attempts to harm them, he must be killed in this manner. Now, boy, they are going to be labeled as the agents of Satan the devil. See? And the world is going to be completely frustrated trying to get rid of them. Here they're trying to pull together everything through the power of the beast and the false prophet, trying to keep the world government going, trying to keep all the nations corralled in the system. They've given all their power to the beast, as we find there in Revelation 13, over every kindred and nation and tongue in the world. Now they have their system, and here are these two ill-dressed, uneducated, as the world would look at it, men who stand there and have power, and they can't figure out the secret weapon when they open their mouth. Fire comes out of their mouth. Now, I wonder what the two witnesses are going to think when that happens. God is probably going to tell them ahead of time, now you have this secret weapon, you use it anytime you want to. Anyone who comes after you, you just use it. Don't worry about it. You are to witness for me. I am here to protect you from all of them, because this is preparing the way for the return of Jesus Christ. Verse 6. These have authority to shut up heaven that no rain may fall in the days of their prophecy, and they have authority over the waters to turn them into blood and smite the earth with every plague as often as they will. And they will say, China, read your headlines in the morning. Thus and such is going to happen. Okay? Iran, this is going to happen to you on Wednesday. You better all be prepared. You know, kind of like Moses and Aaron in the land of Egypt. Now, what are the plagues that come? Well, all the plagues that are listed in the book of Exodus will be the same plagues that God will use. And they will intensify as things come along. And you can imagine all of the messages going to the world government. Why can't you stop them? Listen, we'll help you in any way we can, but you've got to keep them from calling these plagues down upon us. So finally, verse 7, and this is what caught my attention last night when they had captured the second brother. And when they have completed their testimony, the beast who ascends out of the abyss will make war against them and will overcome them and will kill them. So what they're going to do, they will finally get everything together, and they are finally going to kill them. Now, as I was watching what was happening last night, people going out in the streets and celebrating and singing, you know, the Star Spangled Banner at the sporting events with the greatest gusto of all, and everyone happy, and the interviews with all of the officials, you know, you have the commissioner of the police, you have the governor, you have the mayor, you know, all of the mucky-mucks are there. Can you imagine what it will be like in Jerusalem when this event happens, you know? And how was it that you were able to finally kill them? Blah, 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 blah. And you troops that came from this country, you were magnificent in what you did. You see, and so we are going to give everyone credit. And their bodies will lie in the street of the great city, which is spiritually called Sodom in Egypt, where also our Lord was crucified. Then going to have. Now this tells us that this is Jerusalem. But it also tells us something very important. What the society will be like. Be patterned after Sodom and Egypt. And so is it any wonder that nation after nation is approving same-sex unions. I won't dignify it with the word marriage because there's only one kind of marriage, and that's between man and woman. Okay? So after they have killed the two witnesses, notice what they do. Then those of the peoples and tribes and languages and nations shall see their dead bodies 3.5 days, for they will not allow their bodies to be put in the tombs. And those who dwell on the earth will rejoice over them. A 3-day-long night and day bash. They have overcome the greatest difficulty they have been facing in trying to get all of humanity together into one world government and one world religion. And here are these two raggle-taggle, uneducated men in sackcloth and ashes that every time they opened their mouth, they burned everything. And we've sent every weapon we could to try and get them, and we couldn't do it, and we finally did it. And so when I was watching all of the people there on the news come out rejoicing, being happy, drinking, you know, partying, dancing, I thought of this. And we'll send gifts to one another because these two prophets had tormented those who dwelt on the earth. So never sell God short. And after 3.5 days, the spirit of life from God entered into them, and they stood on their feet. And great fear fell upon those who were watching them. You think that's startling, see? Okay. And they heard a great voice from heaven say, see, because they are going to also be suspecting that they're being invaded by aliens, which then is the return of Christ. They'll have the sign of the Son of Man in the heavens for a little over a whole year at this point. And here they have this battle on the earth. And now they're going to be fighting the aliens because at this time, the sign of the Son of Man, and I think it's going to happen this way, the sign of the Son of Man is going to look like a streaking meteor to the earth, and then it will stop right over Jerusalem, the whole area there, and spread out into a large sea of glass. And then the voice comes, come up here. And they ascended into heaven in a cloud, and their enemies watched or saw them rise. Then there was an earthquake and so forth. Right after that, that's ending the second woe, verse 14. Third woe is coming immediately. Then the second angel sounded his, the seventh angel rather, sounded his trumpet, which then is the last trumpet. And since we're counting down toward Pentecost, that's proper that we look at this, saying the kingdoms of this world have become the kingdoms of our Lord and his Christ, and he shall reign into the ages of eternity. So that's going to be quite a thing that's going to take place. But I tell you, I just could not help but think of that when I saw everybody out there rejoicing. Now remember, a lot of them in the whole area around there had to stay in their houses. They couldn't go out. And that affected all of that area, and I didn't realize how close this was to Connecticut. But it also affected those in Connecticut. And so after what went on with the shooting there and this going on here, and so that was my impression of the celebration. But there was also another impression that I had, which comes back here to Leviticus, the 26th chapter. So let's go back here. What we find is something very, very interesting, isn't it? Leviticus 26. And, of course, the whole world, and even the Jews, don't believe the Old Testament. Oh, they cling to it, but they don't believe it, and they can't understand it, because they've rejected Jesus Christ. And they claim that they are the combined 12 tribes of Israel, and don't know anything about the descendants of the lost 10 tribes of Israel, except they say, oh, they were all absorbed into the Gentiles. Yet God says in Amos 9 that he was going to transfer the 10 tribes to different places and not lose one seed, which, by the way, we're getting close to finishing the book. I don't know what we're going to call it, America in Prophecy. Maybe we ought to give it a little more glamorous title. America the Beautiful in the Bible. How about that? And almost all the books that cover about Israel in prophecy, they stop in England. Well, a lot has happened on this side of the ocean. And a lot of things concerning the Bible and the preaching of the gospel and knowledge of the truth is only coming out of the United States of America with any kind of power. So here, Leviticus 26. Now, let's go through this because I think it's really important for us to understand. Now, in the letter of the law, if there would be repentance in America, and if they would do these things, God would honor it. God is no respecter of persons. Now, you see, unfortunately, when you go back and you look at the covenant, that the proposal of the covenant that God gave to Israel, he said, you will be a kingdom of priests to me. Now, what does that mean? That means that they were to take the laws and commandments of God to the world so that the world would understand about God and they could get away from their paganism and their false religions and follow God's way. Well, Israel never did it. The closest time it came was when Solomon had his kingdom. Then all the kings of the earth came to hear him. But what happened to Solomon? He got involved in idolatry, and he got involved in offering incense and sacrifices to false gods rather than teaching the kings that came God's way. Then we also have, when the nation of Britain had the Bible translated by William Tyndale, then there were others who were adding to it, but William Tyndale was the most important one. Now, God was opening the door for Britain being Ephraim in prophecy and having others of the 10 tribes there as well. You also have the Dutch across the English Channel. They were very active with the Word of God. And by the way, Erasmus, who produced the Greek text, which was used and became the Textus Receptus, was from Holland. Now, my suspicion is, so this is my input in that, my suspicion is that both of them were descendants from the tribe of Levi. Now, though both were Catholic priests, they had no love for Catholicism or the Pope or their traditions. Tyndale, more so than Erasmus. But Erasmus compiled what became the Greek New Testament, from which we get the Textus Receptus, and what we did to, that's the text we use along with the Byzantine text form to do the New Testament. Okay? At that point, God was opening up for the next 500 years for Ephraim and Manasseh to rule the world. Because the prophecies back in Genesis 49 about Ephraim and Manasseh being military powers, ruling the world, being the leading nations, had to be fulfilled. So as England went down, the U.S. rose. And in America, plus out of England, they did a lot in getting the Bible out. But they kept their Protestant religion very rigid in England. Now, there were a lot of Sabbath keepers that came out of England and came over to Holland, because when they had the scriptures and saw about the Sabbath, they began keeping the Sabbath, and there was a 20-year period during the time, Oliver Cornwall. He ruled England. Sabbath and holy days, no Christmas. And he made the king renounce his absolute divine authority. Well, long and short story of that is, after 20 years, they finally got rid of him. But in the meantime, God was continuing to do his work, because God continues to do his work always, under all circumstances. And most of that is ignored by the historians of the world, because they don't know what's going on. Now, we find that the pilgrims then came to America. And there were two classes of pilgrims, Sabbath keepers and Sunday keepers. So then the Church of God began to prosper, though few, and spread in America. Now, at that time, about the only difference between the Churches of God and Protestantism in America was Sunday keeping or Sabbath keeping. So because the United States made a pact with God, in forming the nation, in bringing about the Constitution, in bringing about the Bill of Rights, that laid the groundwork for freedom of speech, freedom of religion, and freedom of religion means the practice of it, and that's different than freedom of worship. And then, that the government could make no law concerning religion, and they could not stifle free speech. Now, that paved the way for the gospel to be preached and brought to the world. Now, the Protestants sent out missionaries as they took Bibles to nearly all the countries of the world. And so what happened was they didn't teach them the way of God. They taught them the way of Protestantism. So that, likewise, failed. But in the meantime, the covenant that God made with Israel, as you find in Deuteronomy 28, that would be upon them forever, was being carried out. God blessed us. We controlled our enemies. England and America have ruled the world for 500 years. Not quite. Getting close to it. All right? Now then, these things would come upon the people of Israel, Ephraim and Manasseh, because God held them accountable. They prided themselves with the Ten Commandments. They prided themselves with knowing the truth, but they didn't keep it. Question came up about Sabbath Sunday. What about the holy days? Well, the Churches of God, many of them kept the holy days. But even the Sunday keepers outlawed Christmas in the northeastern colonies. When they had a lot of Germans and then Irish come over, voila. Same thing in England. They did not keep Christmas until the Queen married a German prince. Oh, well, this is so much fun for the kiddies, you see. And some of those hymns in German are really, there's something. I forget the German, so I couldn't say it, but for silent, holy night is Heilige Nacht. And all the Christmas carols that we sing came from Deutschland. Okay. All right. Every time we as a people, be it Britain or be it America, turn our back on God, there's a penalty. Every time he sends warning, there are those who warn. We have seculars who warn, religious who warn, educators who warn, church people who warn, many, many, many warnings, okay? Because God doesn't want us to be without knowledge. So when you think about where we started as a nation and where we are today, then all you have to do is read Deuteronomy 32 about Jeshurun waxing fat. And there's where we are, okay? But here's what God told us. So as we go through some of these verses, let's think about the things that we have today. See, remember what I covered about idols in the mind. Okay? So an idol is not just something that you make and worship. That's one idol. An idol can be a sports team that you give yourself totally over to. An idol can be another person. An idol can be an ideology. Do the progressives have their own idols in their own doctrines, and is that not a religion? Same way with the evolutionist. They have their idols, okay? You shall make no idols to yourself, and you shall not set up for yourselves standing images or a standing pillar. Now, what do we have in Washington, D.C., dedicated to the first president, George Washington? An obelisk from where? Egypt. All right. You shall not set up any image of stone in your land in order to bow down to it, for I am the Lord your God. Now, what do we have in cathedrals? What do we have in churches? Okay. You shall keep my Sabbath, plural, and reverence my sanctuary. I am the Lord. Now, reverencing the sanctuary of God without the temple is really another thing, isn't it? Because we profess to pray to God through Jesus Christ, don't we? To whom? God in heaven above. Well, are we desecrating? We're not desecrating the sanctuary in heaven, but our prayers from these polluted places go up to God, and they are not sincere. They're loaded with pollution and sin. So he says, if. Now let's understand something here, and we've covered this before. All of the ifs in the Bible are for human beings. Right? If. If you will walk in my statutes and keep my commandments and do them, then I will give you rain in due season, and the land shall yield her increase, and the trees of the field yield their fruit. Well, we've had an abundance of food. You know, God promised when you got into the promised land, you will eat food, you will eat bread without scarceness. Okay? Isn't that true? Anybody here hungry? Anybody here have the shakes because you haven't had anything to eat for 3 days? Hardly. Your threshing shall reach to the vintage, and the vintage shall reach to the sowing time, and you shall eat your bread to the full and dwell in your land safely. I thought it was interesting that Jonathan Cahn said, when 9/11 happened, God took away the hedge. Now, we've been vigilant. We've been diligent. We've applied a lot of technology so that we would remain safe. Yet after 11 years, what happened? The Boston Marathon. Plus, there were some other things that took place, too. Okay? I will give peace in the land, and we're gradually losing that, aren't we? And you shall lie down, and none shall make you afraid. Think about what they were thinking in Boston. Think about what they were thinking in the UK when they had these bombers on the loose. And now, in the UK, they have so many Islamists there that what they are doing, they're asking to have set up Sharia courts and jurisdiction over certain areas in England, and they're going to give it to them. And I will cause evil beasts to cease out of the land, neither shall the sword go through your land. Well, look what's happening now. I mean, do a special on pythons in Florida just for one little thing. They're breeding in the Everglades so fast that they can't handle it. Now notice this, verse 7. And you shall chase your enemies, and they shall fall before you by the sword. 5 of you shall chase 100. 100 of you shall put 10,000 to flight, and your enemies shall fall by the sword in front of you. Well, it used to be that way, didn't it? Yes. But what is it now? I will have respect to you and will make you fruitful and multiply you and establish my covenant with you. You shall eat of the old provisions and clear away the old because of the new. And I will set my tabernacle among you, and my soul shall not abhor you. And I will walk among you and be your God, and you shall be my people. You couldn't have any better agreement than that, right? I am the Lord your God who brought you forth out of the land of Egypt from being their bondsman, and I have broken the bonds of your yoke and will make you go upright. So there's the proposition. Then he gives warning, because God always gives warning. So you see the damage of what has happened to the whole nation, because the Protestants have said the Old Testament has been fulfilled. All the laws and commandments ended with the ripping of the veil at the temple when Jesus died. So what does that set up? Now, let's look at the Constitution, though it has mostly a lot of good points in it. If you have freedom of religion, what does that do? That means you can have the good, the bad, and the ugly, right? And you can't stop it. When you have freedom of speech, what does that do? Well, you can speak the truth, but other people can also speak lies. You take a look and see, those things are the two major aspects of the Constitution that gave an opening for Satan the devil to carry out the punishment of God when we would turn our backs on him. And something happened after World War II. A major thing happened. Number one, during the war, because many of the men had to go to war, the women had to get out and work. And after the war was over, they didn't go back home. And what did we want to do for our children at that time? We wanted to give them the best of everything, right? And then in the 1960s, something new happened. Now, this is found in the book, The Death of the Adult. What happened to the families? Well, not only was it that mother was working, that's part of it, but not all of it. The children no longer had work to do at home. And there was so much money that now they had allowances, and their parents wanted them to have everything that they didn't have. So parental control was loosened. At the same time, in came progressive education. Same time, okay? Right after the war. All right. Then in the 1960s, bang. Here came something that people never even thought would change the society. The magazine, 17, and the term, teenager. Now, all of the corporations saw the market, what they could do in advertising and all of this sort of thing, and this cut the young people off from the family. And things have progressed, haven't they? Not only were there the publications for the teenagers, now there were clothes, now there were fads, now there were dances, now there were organizations, and the schools fostered it, and the parents stepped back and let it happen. And the men, because now of the advent of television and movies and things like this, men were derided. Women were exalted. So you see where I'm going with this? Okay? because people don't understand what's happening and why it's taking place. You know, it's just like we saw there in John, the third chapter. Hold your place here because we'll come back. Let's come to John, the third chapter. And let's look at this. Now, as we are looking at this, let's apply this to many different aspects. You can apply it spiritually to coming to Christ. You can apply it educationally when you're educating people and they turn from it. You can apply it to do what people should be doing right in the society and so forth. Because there's right and wrong and good and evil. All right? Verse 19. And this is the judgment, that the light has come into the world. That's Christ. Everything else flows from there. Remember, we're supposed to be the enlightened generation. Remember, we're supposed to know everything, yet we reject God. We embrace evolution, humanism, have excluded God in the last century from schools, from churches, from government. And now if a kid brings a Bible to school, he is subject to discipline. But if he brings a Quran, oh, that's a wonderful diversity thinking on his part. Okay? All right. We have the Word of God. They've got Bibles at home. They're on their shelves. Some people read them. Some just totally ignore them. Some of them ridicule them. And now, you're going to have to bring some sermons on it. We have two new publications of Bibles. I've already mentioned one, the Queen James for the homosexuals. And the New Testament, where all of the Gnostic Gospels are added to the New Testament. And where did they come from? God had them buried in Egypt for 1,500 years. Okay? All right. Why does all this happen? But men love darkness rather than light, than the light, because their works were evil. Then came along divorce. Then came along no-fault divorce. Okay? Now notice, this is what we're up against today. For everyone who practices evil hates the light. That's called, if you expose it, that's hate speech. If you speak against homosexuality, that's hate speech. If you speak against Catholics, that's hate speech. If you speak against Jews, that's hate speech. But oh, they can speak against God. They can speak against those who want the truth. Now, that's perfectly fine. That's not hateful. And does not come to the light. They do not go to God. They stay in their sins, so that his works may not be exposed. But the one who practices the truth comes to the light. So here in this society, God has his people doing this. Coming to the light, keeping the Sabbath, keeping the holy days, understanding the truth. While the society is going down, God's church needs to be growing in grace and knowledge and power and understanding and preaching and teaching and publishing, okay? So that his works may be manifested, that they have been accomplished by the power of God. All right, so when we come back here to Leviticus 23, what we see is a society now turned upside down. Evil is good, good is evil, right is wrong, wrong is right. Plus you bring in all the new technology in it. And stop and think for a minute. Everything that is good, Satan sooner or later comes along and controls and perverts it. Now someone gave me a history of the comic book Batman. Okay? Now, when it started out, it was good versus evil. Of course, everyone said, well, that's good. You want good to come against evil, don't you? How could you be against that? How could you say that this is a silly thing to have a man likened unto a bat? And then have a sidekick, a nice young teenager called Robin. See? All those things together. See? And you can multiply this over many things, and then you can add to it what happened. A new artist took over, and he made it totally satanic. All the characters in it satanic. Now look at the movies. Now look at the stories. Now look at the video things on television now. Now look at them seeking after ghosts. Now look at them. There's even a program called The Medium. And she reads people's minds and gives them good advice. Well, she's a white witch. Oh, but that's a wonderful thing. That's good. There's good magic and there's bad magic, see? No? All right. So I'm bringing out all of these things, see? Then you add into it all the homosexuality, all of the adultery, all of the drugs, all of the bad education that comes along, and turning out mindless people in schools and all of that sort of thing. Okay. So what we'll do, we'll take a little break here and come back.